Spirit Radio Podcasts.
When I was unpacking the groceries there at the week, when you pick up things that they look on the front maybe healthy, say a packet of crisps and it says, you know, and not fried, and you think it's healthy, home baked. But then if you actually look a little bit closer and you look at the additives or the E-numbers in it, are they actually as healthy as they seem? Filled with these E-numbers that are sometimes, they don't have an E in front of them. They might be called by another name. Well, with us in studio to talk to us all about additives and E-numbers and what we should be looking out for and actually what's good and what's bad in these E-numbers, we have our nutritional therapist, Alex Dodd. Morning, Alex. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's start with the big picture. What are E-numbers exactly? What do they mean?
Yes, E-numbers. I think most of us, when they think of E-numbers, they think of food colourings. So they're additives to food, not just colourings. They're also preservatives, antioxidants, emulsifiers, stabilisers, thickening agents and gelling agents. So any kind of product that you might add to a food you're manufacturing to improve its shelf life, to improve its taste, its colour, its appearance. Yeah.
So there's lots of them, basically, is the short message.
Exactly. They usually, well, I mean, they go by the hundreds. You know, you have E106 or 100 or whatever. So it's a European-wide way of labelling these thickening agents and whatever other agents they are and making sure that they're regulated.
So they are regulated. So does that mean that they're okay, that they're not bad for us?
Well, yes and no. So science always moves on. And if we think that sunset yellow or quinine yellow, whatever all these beautiful colours are called, we think that they're okay. And, you know, we discover through maybe scientific research or to just observation that actually these colours might cause problems in people. So I think in the 80s, I was growing up with very, very brightly coloured Cheerios and Smarties and all sorts of fabulous colours. But we've since established that some of these actually have the capabilities of making children hyperactive or giving them allergies. So they've been taken off the market and are much more restricted. So, yeah, not all of them are bad for us, but most of them you wouldn't even notice. Or, for example, one of them, one E number is vitamin C. You know, E300 is vitamin C, ascorbic acid. So it's used as a preservative because it's very useful as a preservative. But in that context, obviously, it's an E number and it's an additive. But if you took it off the tablespoon or teaspoon because you're suffering with a cold, it's not a E number. You know,
it depends on the form.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any kind of big baddies that you should be looking out for? And especially, like, I mean, I'm of course thinking of young kids that are only starting to eat food and all these, you know, what did I pick up the other day? Organic carrot stick snacks, you know, but they're essentially crisps made with corn flour. Now, all this stuff is organic. It doesn't look like there's any preservatives in it from my reading of the label, but I could be missing something. What are the baddies to look out for, especially when it comes to kids?
Yeah, so bad foods and how products are labelled, despite they all having E numbers, we don't often see them as an E number on the label. So you might find xanthan gum or guar gum or ascorbic acid written down rather than their E number. It's just to make consumers less aware of that it is an E number, and because they do carry that sort of slightly negative sentiment, because some colours really aren't great. So personally, I would say for children and for ourselves, just stay away from brightly coloured foods. I mean, it's okay to eat sort of colourful shortening or anything like that occasionally, you know, on a cake or, you know, when you, I don't know, I once went to the zoo and my children were very little and they're running out of energy. Most of them had milk allergies, so I couldn't buy them any dairy chocolate out of the vending machine. The only thing that remained was Skittles. I'm German, I'd never seen Skittles before. Now, they really, really worked because my children were on for another 2 to 3 hours at the zoo.
All the sugar.
Which wouldn't, well, it was actually the colourings that made them mad because that is, you know, there's sugar in it, but not that much. So these colours have a very strong propensity, some of them, to really do drive us mad. So be careful with the colours. But overall, you can't avoid E-numbers because there's just certain additives you need to make foods to give them their appearance and their taste.
Because even I've heard that they add colours to things like salmon, things that you think are really healthy.
Very much so, yeah.
And, you know, if you look at a piece of organic salmon, it's more kind of white, and non-organic, it's pinky because they add that colour to it.
Yes, they put it into the food. They put food dye or colours into eggs, for example. Actually, my husband's family, they started Bally Free, and it all started with an idea of, well, they'd bought too many chickens for breakfast eggs and realised we're going to start selling them. And his uncle realised they like a colour, sort of orange, deep orange yolks. So they put the colour into the food, which produced these Bally Free eggs. And all of a sudden we had a, you know, wonderful new product. So yeah, they do it for salmon. Just makes it look more appetising. Mayonnaise, I think, used to look probably a bit more yellow. Now it's white. It's just we like certain things at certain times. I think where it affects us a lot is if we, for example, crisps, Tato, Hunky Dory's, all these, they would, and Pringles, sorry for calling out brands, but all our family brands would use stabilizers, but also flavor enhancers.
And so what's that?
MSG would be the big one.
Okay, so isn't, when I think MSG, it's funny because a lot of, for example, Chinese and Thai takeaways say no MSG in our food because it's used to kind of thicken. So people kind of know, ooh, MSG is bad. Isn't that the thing that kind of makes food almost addictive as well, though? That makes you just want to eat more of it?
Well, it's a flavour enhancer. And in Chinese cuisine, it's actually, they almost use it like salt. They don't see any issue with it, you know. They just make it, make the food more tasty. And I remember having beautiful Chinese meals. But yeah, it can, you know, if you have too much of these sort of substances in your food, it can, well, does it make it them addictive? But, you know, you just get such
satisfaction,
pleasure
from it,
yeah, exactly, from them. And one thing with MSG, you can have actually a side effect where your temples start sort of going numb and sore. My daughter had it from, I can't remember what she, she'd bought some horrible sweet in some cheap sweet shop. And I just threw it straight in the bin. There was obviously MSG in it as well. So you have to be careful sometimes. But then MSG, we don't really like it. But, you know, they do use it quite freely in other countries. But overall, it's just the same. You know, if once you know you're eating a food that's been made to have nice texture, nice taste, and to last a certain while, you always will have some E numbers in it because it's just not possible otherwise. You know, they will spoil otherwise.
Do you have a rule of thumb, Alex? I mean, I'm just thinking of a recent example, looking at a naan bread, right, that was pre-packaged.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going out of date for months.
Yes.
And my husband was about to try and give a little bit to Matthew. And I said, don't give him that. It can't be good because it's lasting so long. Of course, we were happy to eat it. So that's probably bad in and of itself. Do you have a rule of thumb of like, well, if it's lasting for X amount of time, it's probably
it depends
not good
on the food. I think with breads and things, sometimes, you know what, if that's the only naan bread you can get, and if you, you know, if it suits you to have it sitting on in your shelf at home for a couple of months before you use it, it's okay. But, you know, if you'd eat that at every meal, it wouldn't be okay. So if you buy bread, maybe try to buy really nice fresh bread that you know spoils. So you know there are less preservatives in it. Try to go to a local bakery if there is one near you. Try to, you know, make your own soups. Don't just rely on shop-bought stuff. And just generally try to cook from scratch if you can. And you don't always have to have things like carrot sticks, you know, these packaged baby carrot sticks for a snack. You can actually just peel a carrot and give them one, or maybe a boiled carrot if they don't have teeth yet and can't chew. So, you know, just think of a more natural alternative to what you have, you know, what you might ordinarily give them. I would say as soon as you open a plastic package, as soon as you have 4, 5, or 6 ingredients, it's bound to be something in it that maybe you shouldn't put. Yeah. But having said that, they're not the end of the world. And, you know, we live a lifestyle where we have to eat on the run, and we have, you know, we can't just cook from scratch all the time because we'd never leave the kitchen. So it's all a balancing act.
It's all really about, and batch cooking and freezing where you can is
definitely
really, really useful. In terms of, because you touched on earlier, Alex, just how E numbers can be called other things like the xanthan gum and things like that. So there's a lot to get your head around. Yeah. You're not going to learn them off by heart. Is there a list or a place where you can kind of look at them all and say, okay, this is what they're called, and you kind of know then what to look out for?
Yes. So just to repeat, the E numbers, it's called an E number because it stands for Europe. So it's for European additives, and they're regulated in Europe or in the European Free Trading Association. And the list that I would sometimes refer to is called food-info.net. So it's food-info.net. And they literally just have a list of all the E numbers and the number and then the name beside it. So if you have a preserve or any kind of ingredient you see on a label that you can't figure out, you can enter it into that website and have a look. And it's maintained by a university and independent body in Holland. You know, it's just it's quite a handy list to have, I suppose. Yeah.
And I don't know, is there much regulation about it? Because one thing that certainly fascinated me, I remember when I was cutting out dairy for a while, I felt, and you mentioned one of the things I saw in loads of non-dairy products, xanthan gum. Mm. And I felt when I was looking at these, what seemed to be uber healthy, you know, almond milk and rice milk and coconut milks, that when I looked at the label, well, the first ingredient was water and the coconut or the almond was very far down the list. And there were lots of other things in it. And I kind of thought to myself, really, is this better for me than drinking the milk? it's very hard, isn't it, when things that we're kind of told are better for us, but then looking at the label tells a different story.
Exactly. It's all marketing, and it's all, at the end of the day, these companies are trying to make a profit. They're trying to sell you something, and if it tastes just as good, or, you know, they have panels of consumers that they make, give these new developed products to taste before they even go on the shelf. So if these consumers prefer the ones that have all the thickeners and the sweeteners and the flavorings to the more natural product, you know, obviously this is what we're going to get. But overall, for example, if you make your own almond milk, you literally just put almonds into water and then strain them in the morning. You whisk them up maybe and strain them. And if you leave it sitting for 12 hours, you will see that it separates. And these thickeners, stabilizers, they're just there to prevent that.
Do you make your own almond milk, Alex?
I've done in the past. And oat milk, it's really simple.
That's definitely taking it to another level.
No, it's actually, it's simpler than you think, because you still have to spend time getting to the supermarket. So literally just take a bag of almonds and a liter of milk, leave them soaking overnight, whisk them up. If you have a Maggi mix or something, it's probably pretty easy. Take a muslin cloth. Everybody who's got children has tons of them knocking about the place. Just strain them. And then you have almond milk. And sometimes I put natural vanilla flavor into it, or sometimes a bit of sugar. But yeah, it's
you'll have to bring that in for us the next time. We'll give it a go.
Oh gosh, I've said something now.
Great advice as always, Chris. Thanks a million for joining us on Spirit Radio. If you just joined me, I've been chatting to our nutritional therapist, Alex Dobbs from Grassroots Nutrition. If you want to stay up to date with Alex, and indeed she has a brilliant blog that you can sign up to, go onto her website, which is grassrootsnutrition.ie. Alex, thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.